Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Friday, the 26th of October. A delight to have you with us on this Friday. And I'm happy it's Friday. It feels good. I think we need a weekend. We got one. So let's make the most of it. Let's talk. I want to introduce all our panelists, and then there's breaking news to talk about, and then there's other news to talk about. So we'll get to all of that. We do want to invite you to be a part of our program as well. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Joining us for the discussion this morning, we are pleased to welcome her back, former EPA regional administrator and visiting professor at Bennington College, Judith Enck, is with us. Good morning, Judith.
Good morning. Great to be back.
We missed you a lot.
Oh, thank you.
So we're glad. I know you've been out doing very important work, and we thank you for making time for us. We also have I'll go in this order. Good timing. Siena College economics professor Aaron Pasitti is here. Good morning, Aaron. How are you?
Good morning, Jim. Doing well.
Very nice to have you with us. The Albany County District Attorney David Soares is in the house. Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning. My apologies. I was in the makeup chair. you guys are running out of my shade here.
I know.
It does not show. Sorry.
We were saying before you got here, it's always like when we say, oh, David isn't here yet, but then he'll come in with an excuse like, oh, I'm sorry, we're suing the Pope.
Oh, well, today is a little different. Again, Sarah LaDuke was a little off in the, you know, restocking my particular brand I like, and I have a little glow in my nose.
You've been dusted down. All good. Excellent. We're also thrilled to welcome for the first time to our program director, actor, educator, Kristen Van Ginhoven. She is co-founder and artistic director of Wham Theater. Good morning, Kristen. How are you?
I'm fine, except I didn't get a chance in the makeup chair, so doing my best.
You have to be here 6 months.
That's why we have...
There's a vesting period.
We'll get breaks. Kristen has a lot of really interesting perspectives. One, but you're a new citizen.
Well, we'll find out, I guess. I am a new citizen. I voted for the first time in the September primary. I just sent in my absentee ballot. I became a citizen in August at the Norman Rockwell Museum.
And before that, you were of Canadian extraction.
I still am. I get to keep both, which is very lucky, and I'm very glad.
And could come in handy.
Yes, a lot of people are jealous of my Canadian passport right now.
And before I introduce Alan, tell people what you're up to this weekend.
Oh, we are having a closing weekend of our play Anne at the Tina Packer Playhouse, starring Jane Atkinson. It's a portrayal of the governor, Anne Richards, and it's been going really well, and it's incredibly relevant and topical in so many areas that we didn't even realize when we first picked it, although obviously we picked it on purpose knowing the midterm elections were coming up.
And I just have to say, having seen it, Jane Atkinson as Anne Richards is
phenomenal.
A dream. That's very, very cool.
Are there tickets available for this weekend?
There are. They're going quickly, but we have 4 performances left tonight, 2 tomorrow, and then our closing show on Sunday. So
brilliant
we encourage
play.
Everybody
Excellent.
To come and join us.
By the way,
I saw it, Joe, in Texas. And I got to tell you, I believe the governor, I believe she was sitting in the audience. You know, at the time, and of course, there is nobody better than our wonderful Jane to do this role.
All very, very good stuff. Well, Alan Chartok is the voice you hear now. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, my dear friend.
It's good to have you here. Let's go to what's happening in the world, which is just as of about 15, 20 minutes ago, right before we went on the air. The news agencies are reporting a new suspicious package or packages sent to Senator Cory Booker and James Clapper have been found. So a package found at a New York City postal facility is similar to the others. And then one sent to Cory Booker was found in Florida. So there are two. The scene in, if you look at the scene on television, the live shots that are going on right now of what's happening at the sorting facility in Manhattan, it would remind you of the scene that was on television on Tuesday, with the outside of CNN. CNN. So it's very reminiscent of that. The truck is there, and so we're obviously following that, and we'll I think we kind of know the drill here at this point of that it takes a while for these things, rightfully so, to get all of this in. New York City Police Department was alerted to a suspicious package. It was addressed to former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper and, again, CNN. And brings us up to 12 packages that have been sent. And we know a little bit more than we knew the last time we talked about the story. Many of these packages believed to have come from a facility, to be mailed in a facility outside of Miami. And though, and it is believed that more were mailed, and perhaps all were mailed, but that is still to be completely determined. There was some reporting early on in the investigation that some of these packages were delivered by hand. It now appears that most, if not all, did actually go through the mail. Through all of this, as this continues, not with this last two, but the president has continued yesterday and has stepped up his attacks on blaming this on the media for causing the toxic atmosphere that would allow this type of behavior and the mood in the country, and not taking any personal responsibility, but certainly blaming the media for their role in this. So let me go around the room, and Alan, you want first crack?
Yes, Joe, could I have just one moment to get myself into real trouble?
Oh, great. Oh, yes. Oh, God, I didn't make time for that. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I do want to say something. We got a lot of mail yesterday. I was disappointed in it about Rich Honan being on our air and people saying things like, get a real conservative, or how dare he, you know, say good things about Trump. Look, I don't take second place to anybody in terms of saying of being critical of the current president of the United States, who I consider to be one of the great disgraces in history, and who might be leading us into what I would only consider to be a fascistic state, and his attacks on the press are exemplary of that. And yet, I do want to appeal to everybody to say, hey, folks, come on now. This is what this radio station is dedicated to. And if Rich Honan is willing to come on occasionally, and it's only occasionally, and say things that are abhorrent to many of us.
He would come on more if people weren't so mean to him.
That's right. Well, that's right. I just want to say, hey, who are we? We're not fascists. We're not people who say we only want one side of a situation. We are a radio station that is pretty dedicated to truth and the truth bringing and talking truth to power. And I just want to appeal to everybody to think this thing through, because we really do need to keep this into perspective, and that's all I want to say on that.
Well, and it's also the problem that I think it's a lot of what we're talking about here in this case of our national discourse following these bombs being sent, of such division in the country, and even we can point to the right, we can point to the left, but in this case you simply bring in a conservative voice, which we have been asked to do and we want to do, obviously. I think one of the things Alan and I talked about this on the phone last night, but like a letter doesn't, you know, okay, fine, but the tenor of the mail was disturbing. It really was. It was. I mean, not as though it was threatening, but it was that there is no place for that type of conversation or discourse. And I think I think it shakes you up a little bit.
The reality right now is that we as Americans need to take a time out and engage in a lot of self-reflection. It doesn't matter that you're on the left, but what you're preaching, right, is intolerance. It's as bad on the left as it is on the right.
No, it's not. It's not as bad on the left as it is on the right.
Okay. What I'm saying to you, Judith,
but it's
is
there.
It's there.
Yeah.
Okay. And when and I happen to be in a business right now where if you're in law enforcement, you know, you're being attacked regardless of all of the good that you do on a day-to-day basis because people are watching some atrocious acts that occurred in places in our society. And right now is the moment where if we're going to be first and foremost Americans, it means we come to a table and we start talking to one another again. And Rich happens to be one of my favorite people. His energy, his positive energy is so infectious. And the one thing that I truly enjoy when he's on the air is I love seeing the perspective that he's coming from and trying to figure out, dude, where'd you get that? What are you watching? What are you reading? And it's important.
Well, I want to speak on behalf, I think, of all of us, with the exception of Kristen, who I don't know. You've never met Rich, have you?
I have not.
She's north of the wall. She's from north of the wall. And apparently she got through on a caravan, which we're not guarding the north wall.
But I think I speak for everyone in this room, including Alan, that, you know, Rich, besides, yes, he's a conservative, but he's also one of the nicest guys in the world. We love him. He's been a part of our program for like 20 years. And we have great respect. And I would say also he has great respect for all of us. He enjoys being a part of these conversations. And I don't want to make this about us, but it is interesting. And I think you're absolutely right, David. It is interesting that you know, just because there is a point of view that is expressed that may not be yours, that we're just going to shut down and say that has no place for me. Like I can't tolerate listening to it, which is
old.
And there are a lot of people who feel that way.
Oh yeah,
look, this is a very frustrating situation. I think Judith makes the point. This is a terrible man. Trump is a terrible man. He is, and you know, I mean, what can I say except that if somebody comes on and makes an argument, we have to listen to the argument. We can reject it. I think Judith does. I know I do. We can fight with him. We can argue with him. But that's what this country should be. Not a country which says there's no place, as Joe just said, at the table for you.
And also listen to him. I mean, I give Rich a lot of credit for showing up. And I think, you know, when I worked in the government, I often urged my colleagues to listen with the intent to hear. I'm kind of fascinated by Trump supporters, especially when they can get past the Fox News talking points.
Right.
I want to understand, and because it's just unfathomable that, you know, that these policies just keep getting worse and worse. I'm in the camp of just when you think it can't get any worse, it does.
And yeah. No bottom. No bottom.
Yeah, we've seen that this week. But, you know, quite honestly, I think the change comes from us, what we can do in our communities, what we can do as advocates, as elected officials, and to be responsible Americans these days involves listening to all viewpoints and then making a judgment and acting in a nonviolent, principled way. And David, that was my point in terms of left and right. I think what we see unfolding this week is it's hard not to believe that this is inspired by a president who is inflaming things. We count on our presidents to be unifying voices in moments like this, and we have a president who seems determined to make the division worse.
Yes. Can I just ask? I love what you just said, Judith. But can I just ask our newest guest? How much theater she sees in Donald Trump? How much of what he does is theater?
Oh, there you go, Kristen. Take the bat at that.
I know. I was like, just launch me in there, Alan. Thanks a lot. Well, I guess I have a unique perspective because I can look at it as a Canadian, as the daughter of Dutch immigrants who showed up in Canada after the war with, you know, $40 in their pocket. As a new citizen of America and as an artist. So I sort of get to look at this from a lot of different perspectives. And actually, I've had a lot of really fascinating conversations with Republicans, so I guess feel a little safer chatting to me, knowing that I'm Canadian. And to David's point and Judith's point, having all these conversations with people where everybody really is trying to listen to each other, the rational people I hear my friends talking about being in taxis, and having conversations in taxis with Republicans and Democrats. Everyone's trying to understand where people's perspectives came from. But to answer Alan's question, I see a lot of theater in Donald Trump. I share the perspective that I think Alan has and other people on this panel that there are very deliberate actions being taken, that the president understands how to hold an audience, how to focus an audience on certain parts of a story in order to make other things happen. He understands the rise of dramatic action. It's fascinating case study for theater departments around the world, I'm sure.
Mr. Shartok, out of respect for our Can we just say theater?
I think theater. It is spelled T-R-E and no other way.
I do come from Canada, so it is an R-E. But well, I also
you've been flexing your Canadian muscles, and I just have to say, she's got the red arm. She's got the power suit.
I know. I have to wear my power suit.
You were going to say?
I also wanted to say
can I hold you on that point?
Yes.
Because one of the things
but
you'll learn
really good,
is,
so it,
okay, all right, so hold it. You'll remember it. We won't, but you'll remember it.
I will.
We'll be right back after this break. Listening to Barnstar, the great group Barnstar this morning. They're playing Racebrook Lodge in Sheffield, Massachusetts. WeAreBarnstar.com for more information, and our playlist is always available at wamc.org/roundtable. Now,
a little correction, Joe, if you're talking about Massachusetts, it's Barnstar.
Barnstar. said the Rhode Islander.
The Red Sox fan?
That's right.
Doing well. All right.
A
couple quick letters, and then we'll put just a lot of letters in support of Rich, and I'll just go through these quick, but Sean says, I thought the dialogue between Vera and Rich was one of the best discussions I've heard in weeks, if not months, anywhere. I hate Trump, but I love hearing a good discussion. And in fact, I'm so parched for that dialogue. Go WAMC. Naomi says, Rich is a good counter, and please tell him I, for one, am glad he's on the show. Timothy says, keep him coming on. I appreciate hearing other sides of you in such a thoughtful manner. Wanting just to hear an echo chamber is ridiculous. I certainly support him and Alan's point of view. Eve says, I'm the leftist person you've ever heard of. Rich Homan deserves a prize for agreeing to enlighten us about the conservative point of view, and thank you, Rich. And George says, bravo, Alan.
So I've known Rich well before I started appearing on the roundtable, and he and I have had some very intelligent conversations. And just because somebody's conservative does not mean they're a bad person. And he's very principled, and he's consistent with his views. And just because he thinks healthcare is a commodity does not mean that he is the devil. I really enjoy talking to him and understanding what the opposing side is, and like David said, that's what intelligent debate is about. Dogmatism is dogmatism, whether it comes from the left or the right, and to a certain extent, I think I'm dogmatic, and I think Rich can be dogmatic, but there's flexibility there, and I really appreciate what he has to say, and I really enjoy hearing him on the roundtable.
Well, that's great, Aaron, and I have a big butt. But I still think
he's
wrong.
You have a big butt?
Well, he can't deny it.
Actually, you're going to go there, right there. You're going to go to that.
I was told never trust a big butt and a smile. That's why.
So Alan's new name is Sir Mix-a-Lot, Dr. Mix-a-Lot.
Wow. The district attorney with a butt joke.
This theater
okay.
just right here on this
yeah,
panel.
That's so
just
great.
Fascinating.
When we last Theater's left you, when we last left, we were, before we went to break, I promised that we would let Kristen make her point to give her full time. So
please
let's do that.
Well, and it's connected to what the writer said about being parched for these kinds of conversations and what you said about, Aaron, about listening to different points of view. I was listening to this TED Talk radio show a long time ago about dialogue and exchange, and I wrote this on a post-it note, and I have a picture of it, and I've shared this with so many people because we are parched for these conversations and trying to understand where different people's perspectives are coming from. And if we can learn how to frame our conversations in the values of the conservative, then we actually have a chance at having these conversations that you're saying you enjoy so much with Richard. And this is not going to be a surprise to anybody listening, but I think it's always, for me, it's been really great to look back at this post-it note. Our liberal values, which everyone in the room is going to be like, yes, of course, equality, fairness, protecting vulnerable people from harm, and social justice. And then the conservative values, moral purity, patriotism, group loyalty, respect for authority, religious sanctity. In this TED Talk, they took climate change and they took it from the different perspectives. And of course, when they framed it in my values, I was like, yeah, nodding and agreeing completely. And when they framed it in the conservative values, it didn't get to my heart nearly as much. But, you know, somebody else who's a conservative actually was listening to the debate about climate change because it was framed in their values. And that's what I've been trying to do. And I think what you're all talking about the conversations with Richard, is we get to hear it framed from someone else's values and try to understand where those perspectives are coming from. And I'm having as many conversations with Republicans as were stacking wood in my garage a week ago, you know, about why they didn't vote, why they're going to vote this time, and all of that stuff.
Stacking
so
wood.
That's the point. You know, I think it's been important for me to think about framing things in these values and understanding that just as strongly as I feel about these liberal values, the conservatives feel just as strongly about those other values. And I need to have respect for that.
But I think we have to. Oh, I'm sorry, because, you know, I started all this. But
yes, you know, you did.
But Trump is a very bad man.
Yeah, but you know, but if you listen to Rich, he doesn't always support what Trump is doing. He's saying, we need immigration reform, and I don't necessarily agree with Trump's approach to it.
Yeah, Aaron, yesterday he did. Let's face it, he did.
Well,
are you lumping all Republicans with President Trump?
No, and that's exactly the point. You're making exactly the right point. This is a very bad man. He is not a Trump. In my mind, he is president, and he got himself elected president one way or the other.
But he's an excellent theater man.
Yeah. But the truth of the matter is, he's self-serving. He gets stuff for himself as opposed to for the conservative principles he stands for. I think there's a big difference between genuine conservatives and Trump. I think Trump's a bad man, and I'm going to continue. I said it. I'm going to continue to say it.
Judith.
Yeah, I agree, Alan. I think Trump is a bad man. It's a sad thing to say about our elected president. And I've come to the conclusion that rather than him being a policy expert, rather than him even being an ideologue, I think just on a personal level, to your issue of performance, I think Trump needs to win every media cycle. He needs to be dominant, even if he's portrayed in a negative light. And we are in such a perilous time, because if he's not front page of the New York Post and the New York Daily News, he'll do something to get on the front page. And the way you get on the front page is by saying and doing more outrageous things.
I absolutely agree, Judith.
And we're in this cycle. Like, how does this end? He's, as some commentators have said, he wants to be the bride at every wedding, the baby at every christening. And it's all about him. And it's just bringing us in a bizarro direction that is not, we've never been here politically.
But we reward him for that. Donald Trump, we can continue to focus on Donald Trump, the man, the president. The problem that I have is continuing to focus on those issues alone. We should be focusing on ourselves, the body politic. Why is it that this virulent strain, This person, how was he able to capitalize and succeed right now? And you know, he's been rewarded for his behavior. His recent small bump in his approval ratings is because he continues to drag us into this this space about values, right? Whenever we're talking about his policies, whether it's the children and the families at the border. You know, he can't win any of those arguments, right? So he has to just jump in front of a camera and continue to talk about NFL players. He divides us amongst race. Right. He divides us along all of these other, you know, values. And that's the thing that we have to stop biting on, right?
Yeah. Well, because the theater distracts from the policy.
We say theater here.
Theater. The theater distracts from the
David
policy.
I'm not saying that.
So, you know, yes, him being on the front page of the New York Post and saying these outrageous things really distracts from some of the most important thing, which are the policies that he's recommending. He called the Federal Reserve loco and crazy.
Who among us have not said that about the Federal Reserve?
Sorry. And he understands that most people, that's what we're drawn to. I mean, at our core, we're these simple people who get drawn to the simple headlines, and we want to look at the horrible murder that's happened, and that's kind of what we're drawn to looking at it. He understands that very well.
I learned from Alan about this years ago of when it comes to politics, you know, that we tend to go to the things that we understand, and then that's what he's so good at is bringing us to the very base of things that we get of what makes people happy or sad.
Well, to that point, and what David mentioned earlier, last night Howard Dean spoke at Bennington College. I went over and listened because I'm just looking for wisdom anywhere. He talked a lot about Arlie Hochschild's book, and I'm afraid I can't remember the name of it right now.
I will tell you because it's one of my favorite books of all time. We've had her on twice, and it's amazing.
And one of the premises is that, and a reason why so many people voted for Trump, President Trump, is because for many Americans who are not doing well economically, they believe that they're waiting their turn. And as they get older and they build up resources, they'll do better. They now see people cutting in line ahead of them, namely women in the workforce. Too bad. Immigrants. Somehow this extends to LGBTQT people. You know, why that is cutting in line, I don't know. But it's kind of a feeling that people are taking away their ability for economic prosperity.
Yeah. It's Arlie Hochschild's Strangers in Their Own Land, Anger and Mourning on the American Right. And not to give a plug, but we have an interview, two interviews actually with her, both before and after the election that we did, because it's a stunning book.
Is it on the AMC website?
Yeah, it's on the website.
Okay, good.
Yep. Yes. Who was going to make
a... I think Judith's exactly right because, you know, for the average middle and upper middle class family, their, you know, inflation-adjusted income has been stagnant since the 1970s. That's as much of a result of Republican as it is Democratic policy. It's a stacked deck, and after decades of, you know, declining mobility for a lot of people, most people are sliding down the income ladder, you know, it was Bill Clinton who passed permanent normal trading relations with China. It was Bill Clinton who devised NAFTA. All of these programs put U.S. workers in direct competition with foreign workers and provided exceptional protection for investor rights, but said nothing about labor or environmental regulations. So I understand why people – I understand Trump's appeal to people given what has happened economically over the past, you know, three or four decades, and it really comes down to inequality and that the economy has been hijacked by the top 1%. And I know that's kind of a drum that's been beaten a lot, but it's true. And whether it's the Koch brothers or whether it's, you know, the CEO of Goldman Sachs or Steve Mnuchin or Jamie Dimon from J.P. Morgan,
but what is
the deck is stacked.
Yeah, but so what is truly frustrating is... what is so extremely frustrating is that the people who have the most to lose continue to vote against their self-interest.
Right.
and there's a failure, to understand and grasp the issues that are being, you know, discussed, legislation that's being passed. They're willing to accept, you know, the talking points of the conservative right. There is no way if human beings, if every American actually understood or understood the issues that are being discussed, there's no way that you'd ever have the Congress that we have right now, that you'd have the president that we have right now. You're talking about NAFTA, right? And the fact that Bill Clinton left out anything that has to do with organized with labor and wages and left anything out that has to do with the environment. Well, what are the two issues, right, that you'll never get support from with a conservative or a Republican, you know, government? Those are two of the issues, right? And so how it is that people, the working class, the working class people of these red states continue to vote for the party that won't protect those interests, that won't advocate for those interests, is dumbfounding.
They're voting their aspirations instead of their material situation?
I don't know if they're voting their aspirations because who aspires when they're talking about the Dow Jones, when they're talking about, you know, the 1% and the tax breaks that were just being passed, like, who really believed that this was going to impact on them? What they did was they fell for the stunt, the theater, of having companies and corporations, you know, hand out a $1,000 bonus here, $1,000 bonus there, and it was being done. It's like all of a sudden that whole week, it was like all these companies coming forward, we're going to give workers a bonus. It's like, but you didn't talk about giving them a permanent increase in their salaries.
Remember what Trump ran on, though? What he said in his campaign was middle class tax cuts, and I'm fighting for the average, you know, working family. That was his pledge.
The blue collar billionaire made that pledge.
Okay, so people might have assumed that he was some benevolent billionaire, perhaps. But what happened after that was just a complete abdication of anything he said. So it'll be interesting to see in the midterms and then in 2020.
Yeah, but I was driving down here on Marketplace. They shared that story of the reporter who's in the town in Texas and that waiting in line, a man who's been struggling. He finally has this good paying job and he's voting for the incumbents. He's like, I don't want anything to change. I'm finally earning a living. To him, it's not an aspiration. It is a material consequence that he's seeing happening in his bank account.
And we're also seeing the reverse right now because have so many people who, of course, hated Obamacare, and former President Obama predicted this, that the minute they got it and they started liking it, they were going to call it something else. And now you have these Republicans who voted against this thing no less than 60 times, claiming that they're the protectors of pre-existing conditions.
We have to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation, and we will do so right after this short break.
I think we're alone now. Doesn't seem to be anyone around.
Barnstar playing Racebrook Lodge, Lounge in the Lodge in Sheffield, Massachusetts. We are barnstar.com for more information. All right, some letters. Let's go to those, and that'll bring us up to the top of the hour, I'm sure, and then we'll do a lightning round and get to lots of stuff in a short period of time. Chris writes, Alan, you are my favorite political commentator, but when you say every opinion or view has merit, that's not true. We don't have to respect everyone's opinion. There are racists and sexists and bigots that have many opinions which should not be respected. That being said, not every opinion on the right or left should be respected for the sake of being respectful.
I demand the right to reply. I never said that. I mean, you know, I love it when people put words in my mouth. I certainly have been pretty forward about Trump and what I think about him and how disgraceful he is. I don't agree with Rich, not at all. But I think people should hear him. I don't think that means his arguments have merit, but I think his arguments should be met and should be met publicly.
No, his arguments do have merit. You just disagree with the conclusion he draws from that.
No.
Okay.
Maureen says the country is under attack by a bomber or bombers, and Trump makes it all about himself as a victim. Right. No normal person would do this. It's evident to me that Trump is sick. He's making the rest of us sick with anger, too, like we're captive in a dysfunctional family. I feel like I'm fighting real, active evil. Lawrence says, I believe that a certain level of competence is required to assemble and deliver multiple explosive devices to public figures without getting arrested or blown up in the process. I expect death and or serious injury before this is all over. We will certainly hope.
And what
that
about
is not
the poor postal workers? And
I know.
And the people who open mail and mail rooms. You know, I'm so disturbed by this narrative that, well, none of the bombs have gone off. And it's not just the people who are the targets of it, but it's literally thousands of people handling mail every day.
Well, go ahead. That is truly, I'll tell you something. I tend not to get too emotional about things. But this past week has been a challenge for me listening to people engage in the false equivalences of being thrown out of restaurants to having these things mailed to you.
Those are the
cynical people, and I have nothing but disdain for those people, because even if it's a false alarm, which we don't know at this point, right? False alarms cause a lot of people to react. That's the reason we take them seriously. That's the reason why we prosecute people who call the fire company and report false, crimes. Because that engine on the road at 70 miles an hour, at 55 miles an hour, that engine is putting other people on the road in danger. When we call people, when we call the police and say there's a person with a gun, and you know that person doesn't have the gun, and the police are arriving believing this to be a threat to public safety, those reports get taken very seriously, and we prosecute those people for it. What we don't say is, well, there's no body and no one got harmed, so mm-hmm. let's just let this go.
I really can't imagine he's listening, but if you're listening, Robert De Niro, please go back to your Travis Bickle role and start doing something about this.
That needs some explanation.
I'm not endorsing that. I'm not endorsing that. I've seen the movie.
A taxi driver.
A taxi driver. We don't want
that. That was a joke. That was a joke.
All right.
You know what Freud said? Freud said there is no joke.
Joe says, I wonder if it isn't Putin behind it. The bombs haven't exploded except in our minds. He seems to want to control our minds. Luke says, maybe the problem isn't the president. Maybe the problem is the country that elected him. Maybe he is not only the bad actor, maybe we are too. Then we have a couple letters here for you, Judith.
I'd like to agree with that guy. Just
all right, put it on the record.
Put that on the record. we are the problem. When we allow one person to divide us the way that he's divided us, and when we are angry at one another, right, because of a certain hat a person's wearing, or the fact that you might be watching the NFL on Sunday instead of boycotting it, when we as citizens allow ourselves to get caught up in that and we stop talking to our neighbors.
Or stop voting.
They're winning. He's winning.
Brian, a couple for Judith here. Brian says, Judith needs perspective. The rhetoric coming from the right is worse than the left. Seriously, Judith? Absolutely not. The harassment and rhetoric coming from the left is unreported and underreported by the liberal media. The panel is in a frenzy about a dozen packages, yet no one has been shot on a softball field for being liberal.
Well, I strongly disagree with that. Of course, no one should be shot on a softball field anywhere. But having, for instance, people showing up in Congress exercising their constitutional rights to oppose the Kavanaugh appointment, and having the president and congressional leaders saying that that's just a mob, that's democracy. Yeah.
And Judith, you know, I'm waiting for Gabby Giffords to write in to take issue with this last remark. The moment we start to talk about Democrats, Republicans, liberal, conservative, when people are being shot, no, these people are criminals, right? In my business, I have the luxury of not having to consider how someone voted or what party, you know, they belong to. The reality is violence, and we shouldn't become tribal about violence or the threat of violence.
All right, save it because we have another letter of a similar vein. Judith, who are you kidding? Conservatives worse than liberals? I don't see liberal free speech on college campuses being suppressed. I don't see mobs of conservatives damaging cars. I don't see congressional elected leaders being harassed at dinner. Don't see shots being fired at House Congress members. There is a nut job out there regarding the fake bombs, but no one knows the motivations of this crazy person. Judith, please give examples of conservative parallels to the real life examples that I noted, examples where physical violence actually occurred or precious free speech suppressed. John.
God, didn't we just say Gabby Giffords?
Timothy McVeigh. I mean, I abhor violence on all sides, but I do think we have a president who is bringing, he's legitimizing some very dangerous and destructive behavior, and we have to recognize that.
Now, I don't want to, I certainly do not believe that we have troubled Judith in any way, but I just, before we go to the break, I will give her a letter just to boost her spirits a little bit.
Oh, I'm
which
fine.
Is from, I know you're fine.
I have perspective.
I know you're fine, but just because I have it and I would like to share it with you, which is from Janet, who says, could Judith please comment about the ocean policy from Trump that is supposed to address the ocean debris and plastic in the ocean?
Yeah, it's very limited. The president signed a bill 2 weeks ago, mostly pointing fingers at other countries. And it is a greater problem in Asia than it is in the United States, but it's a little bit more money to NOAA for their marine debris program. I mean, it's fine. It's not going to do any damage, but it's not nearly the response that we need to deal with the growing crisis of plastics in the ocean. Estimates are by 2025, for every 3 fish in the ocean, there will be 1 pound of plastic. That's a problem.
All right. Well, keep that in your mind. And we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll go into the lightning round, and we'll get We'll get David in the makeup chair.
What about me? Oh,
how else is he going to cover his neck tattoo?
All right, we'll be, by the way, that was just so you know, that was a reference to an earlier conversation a couple weeks ago. Just want to make that known. Okay, we'll be back right after this.
Been stuck in airports, terrorized, sent to meetings, hypnotized.
Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our program this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Oh, we got another truck on the road with a bomb in it. All right, we've been watching these all week. These trucks are cool, I must say. But
and New York City does get about 50 bomb threats every day. So sadly, those are
is that right?
Yeah. Are used,
yeah. But most of them are not real bomb, bomb threats. Yeah. It's a big deal. They take them to the Bronx, to a very isolated area.
But more importantly,
EPA. Oh, wow. I know about bombs.
Okay. But more importantly, Joe, was that the Traveling Wilburys? I mean, who do we just hear?
Oh, that was playing. That was Barnstar. And they're playing.
It was?
Yes.
And we are Barnstar.
We are Barnstar.com is their website. And thank you all. Okay, so let's get to some other stuff here. We've got a lot of topics to talk about, and I promised a lightning round, so let's do it. Of course, the big story that we have not talked about, which is the huge story that it was the story that we would have led with had there not been two more bombs that were found in about the time we went on the air, and that is President Trump considering a plan to ban entry of migrants at the southern border, denying asylum. This is the migrant caravan, and the president is fixated on this in this article from the Washington Post that I'll read the first paragraph from. Fixated on the migrant caravan moving north through Mexico, President Trump is weighing a plan to shut the U.S. border to Central Americans and deny them the opportunity to seek asylum, asserting similar emergency powers used during the early 2017 travel ban, according to administration officials and people familiar with the proposal. The White House is also preparing to deploy as many as 1,000 additional U.S. troops to assist in security operations at the southern border in anticipation of the caravan's arrival. Under U.S. law, foreign nationals fleeing persecution have the right to apply for asylum once they reach American soil. But the executive order under consideration would suspend that provision and bar Central Americans as a matter of national security, according to those familiar with the proposal.
Another travel ban. I mean, go ahead, Ellen.
I was just going to say, can you imagine if you took 1,000 people from the State Department and brought them down there and made sure that every single person who was asking for asylum was thoroughly vetted so that there was no chance of MS-13 or anything like that. But rather than having soldiers with bayonets, you had people who said, okay, we are, as Americans, committed to letting people into this country who are fleeing the worst kind of oppression.
Well, that has, until now, that has somewhat been the tradition of this country. There is a legal way to apply for asylum. Things are very, very bad in Honduras. That's why you see these increased numbers. But you know, it's the same division as the first travel ban that Stephen Miller and Steve Bannon cooked up the first week of the Trump presidency. It likely won't. I mean, David, I'd be interested in hearing from you on this. It likely won't withstand legal scrutiny, but it'll have the effect of, you know, we're close
this
to the midterm.
Designed.
Well, I mean, it'll have the effect. I mean, this is midterm.
Caravan.
We're on tour. Right. We're on tour watching the same group play its, you know, 70th show. We know the playlist.
Right.
This is just a terrible, terrible trumped up, you know, effort to get us to stop paying attention to the real issues that are going on right now. Yes, he'll issue an executive order, but it's all theater. It will not withstand constitutional scrutiny. And so, but by that time, it'll be a month away, 2 months away, and they will have regained, you know, seats because the issue that will galvanize that base.
Yeah,
and so we need to be talking about real issues, like, for example, health care. what's going to happen to healthcare. Mitch McConnell already gave us, you know, the map, right? If Democrats stay focused on what Mitch McConnell has already said, which is we've got to look at Social Security, we got to look at Medicare, we got to start cutting away there in order for us to, you know, avoid this terrible problem that, quote unquote, the Democrats have put us in. So, you know, this issue here, yes, it's on the front pages of our newspapers, but a travel ban. We're going to have to deal with the transgender issue in the military again. I mean, he's just dialing up all of the hits that we've heard over and over for the last 6 months.
Let's not forget that, you know, U.S. policy on the U.S. government's war on drugs and its effect on Central America is a big part of this in terms of fomenting violence and enriching cartels and really, I mean, forcing people to seek asylum.
Yeah, guess what? You know, when you develop a foreign policy that requires building up borders and you're going to all of a sudden punish nations that are critical of you by not offering them aid, guess what happens in those countries? You have problems that happen in those countries. You know, the idea that we could have avoided Syria, right? The idea that the world could ignore what was happening in Syria, that's the reason you have so many people seeking asylum in Europe. And so do you think the Europeans would have had a change of heart had they known what, you know, the sudden influx of millions of people were going to do to their economies? They probably would have decided to do something a little different and engage in some intervention. It's the same thing that's happening here. We have to continue to be committed to our neighboring countries, including Canada. We have to establish great relationships, because if people are living their best lives where they're living, they tend to stay there.
Yeah.
Well, and I kept thinking about Trudeau's tweet during the original travel ban that happened that you were talking about, Judith, and wondering, you know, when that was going to come about. This, like, just keep walking. It's so interesting for me to see this. I think the left sees this caravan and our heart just kind of opens to these people and thinks, you know, we must help them. We must provide them an opportunity to live their best selves. And then we think about the immigration system and everybody talking about looking at that problem and how do you, we have so many people who are living in these horrendous circumstances who need the opportunity to live their best selves. So how do we make that possible?
I apologize for my naivete on this, but 1,000 troops seems like a lot.
It's more theater.
Okay. I got that, yeah. But eventually we're going to see that picture and I'm just wondering what that's going to look like.
Well,
I don't,
it's not going to take very long.
Well, in fairness, President Bush and Obama also dispatched troops and it wasted about $1.35 billion. Little was accomplished with
that. It's a lottery winning in South Carolina.
Yeah, there you go. But, you know, federal law does limit the use of the military for domestic purposes. So they're going to stretch a little bit here. Mattis says they're going to send 1,000 troops. That I agree, Joe, that I think they just want the visual.
They want the visual.
Of course they do.
And last night, Homeland Security Secretary Kristen Nielsen was interviewed on Fox.
With her Ray-Bans? Did she have her top gun outfit on?
Yeah, pro tip. Take off your sunglasses when you're talking about a serious issue. And the Fox, I can't even say reporter, the Fox celebrity asked her, would the military be shooting people at the border? And she said, not at this time. And that her goal was to make sure that the border security staff, who are often armed, are protected.
And I apologize for going on a mini tangent. However, this is the same director of Homeland Security whose office oversees the Secret Service, which a president, two presidents, and a vice president had an assassination attempt on this week. And not a word.
And by the way, the same director that oversees the agency that's been trying to convince her boss not to use, you know, unsecured phones. So the idea that she is anything other than a Top Gun, you know, she looks great in those Ray-Bans, and we need to continue to take these photos and continue to have her out there. you know, for the next 2 weeks, at least until the midterms, you know, come and go, that's the goal here. And yeah. You know what? I just want one. I got to ask you one question before we get off the air, because the president did, in fact, some months ago talk about Canadians that come here take our shoes. So are you part of like the Pro Keds cartel?
Or I'm wearing Dansko's. So
are you smuggling those? Are you smuggling those back?
So the story about the president's phone is, I mean, if the centerpiece of the campaign was not about the emails, this wouldn't be a story. Yeah. But the fact that
it would still be a story.
It would still be a story.
It's a serious security risk.
So the president is dismissing a report on his intercepted cell calls as boring and wrong. Although there are many who feel that it is not boring, that the New York Times description of how American intelligence agencies have figured out that China and Russia are eavesdropping in calls that Mr. Trump makes from his iPhones, and that the president has continued to use a cell phone despite warnings from aides that the calls on it are not secure. And by the way, these calls include calls to Fox News, to various leaders around the world, to relatives, and there you go.
Yeah, the Nixon tapes were pretty boring too, right?
Well, in terms of Russia listening and you're cutting out the middleman, they're just
yeah. making it a little easier. Yeah. Remember the old days when you had the mobile phones and you just like hear it on your, you could hear it on a CB, you know? Yeah.
Well, that's kind of what's going on in Washington. Yeah. I mean, this is actually a very serious problem.
Tell you who is listening. Seth Rogovoy is listening. And he wrote us a letter.
All right.
A very important letter.
All right.
What we heard was the bluegrass group Barnstar doing their cover version of the Traveling Wilburys, Handle With Care.
Sharpier?
In other words, Alan was right.
Oh,
wow.
Okay. That
Thank
was right.
Goodness.
It was.
Yeah. I think we can all sleep better tonight knowing that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. But it wasn't the Traveling, just so we know.
No, it wasn't. You're right.
It was
You're
Barnstar
right.
performing.
Of course.
That was
covering the Traveling Wilburys.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. Now we have, let me see. I want to go to one more
Can
thing.
Can I ask what the point of a call log is before we go to the next one?
Yeah.
If we're not even going to, you know, hear about all the calls that are being made? They made such a big point in the New York Times article. We release the call log every morning. I'm like, but who cares if we're not seeing all the calls?
Well, it's like...
Seems like that's part of the president's responsibility
and job.
You're
legally required to maintain the record of the calls and also all written correspondence. And you remember a few months ago, we saw pictures of whenever the president has paper on his desk, he rips it in half and a poor aide has to go and tape it back together so they're complying with the Records Retention Act.
Ooh. But of course,
somebody's the official taper.
Said a former bureaucrat who's really into the Record Retentions Act. It's actually very important. That is the history of the government.
Absolutely. There's all this stuff about President Obama and his phone, and now.
But
don't get Doris Kearns Goodwin going on this.
No,
one.
I agree.
Right?
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say the call log is important, but the call log doesn't include who was listening in, right?
Right.
No, that's right. Yeah, no, it doesn't get into the audience. So a final issue in our last 5 minutes. The president says that he's taking revolutionary action. He was busy yesterday. No question about it. Busy. It says he's taking revolutionary
picking all the points
action to lower drug prices. Mm-hmm. Took his most significant action yet, saying his administration is moving to stop global freeloading by foreign nations when it comes
Top-notch
to the price
theater.
That Americans pay for prescription drugs. The announcement is a sign that the president and his aides are shifting their focus to health care 2 weeks before the midterm elections.
Yeah.
In a speech Thursday afternoon at the Department of Health and Human Services, Trump said his administration would be taking the revolutionary step of allowing Medicare to directly negotiate prices with drug companies that he says have rigged the system, leading to U.S. patients paying more for their medicines.
Good. So the next step is Medicare for all then, right?
By next week.
If he's going down this path, then why not just have single-payer health care? If he wants to be revolutionary, here's his chance.
It's Michigan J. Frog, right? It's Michigan J. Frog with the top hat coming out singing because – He just
hello
talked.
My baby.
Yeah, hello, hello my baby. Right. And then all of a sudden, when someone's watching, it's like, burp, you know, he comes right. back to a frog.
I didn't
right?
know the frog had a name.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Michigan J. Frog. Oh yeah.
Yeah, my point is, the other day he's talking about tax cuts for the middle class when right. Congress isn't in session, right? Right. So it's like it's such desperation to try to gin up turnout for the House.
But
right?
but if this is real, and I know it's not, but if it's real, this is a good policy. Yes. This is something we've wanted for years and years.
Except you know it's not real because right. he's not real about anything he talks about.
Right.
But it's half donkey. I'm not allowed to say what a donkey really is. It's half donkey in that if you think
Dave said big butt earlier, but yeah, he didn't say big ass.
Okay, that's fair. It's half butt. It's half butt because he doesn't go all the way. What he does is he says we want to pay what the Europeans are paying under this thing, but he doesn't talk about our direct negotiations with the drug companies, which are strictly prohibited, as they say in the theater before they turn the movie on.
You know, the remarkable thing is for somebody, you know, for the Republican Party, who has been banging the free trade drum for, I don't know, since the end of World War II, that one of the areas in which the U.S. has the least free trade has to do with prescription pharmaceuticals. There's heavy protection for intellectual property, right. And it's all justified in the research and development argument mm-hmm. that the pharmaceutical companies have. But sure, if Republicans want to have free trade, let's have free trade in medical services and prescription drugs as well.
We have about a minute and a half, so I'm going to finish up with some letters. We got this one from Lucy, who says, so why isn't the American media listening to the president's cell phone calls as well as the Russians? Mitch says, love the panel and Rich coming in. Can the panel comment on some people calling the caravan in Mexico an invasion?
Great imagery for the theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. William says, who should we be more scared of, Trump himself or those who enable and support him? I think you can be scared of everything, can't you? I don't think you have to be limiting in your fear.
It gets to the point, if Trump does not run or doesn't win a second term, how do we put the country back together again with everything he has instilled in people? I'm a little more nervous, actually, about people who are kind of following
on the fringe
his racism, his sexism, his homophobic comments. I mean, this is long-term damage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree.
All right. We are out of time.
On that happy note.
That was
a
great.
Happy Friday.
It's always a happy time when we end this panel. My thanks to everybody. Judith, thank you very much. David, Aaron, always a pleasure. Kristen, great job. Thank you so much for coming
in.
We
for
look forward
me.
To having coming
to more
back.
Theater.
Excellent. And Alan, be well. Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.